The path was not straight for Elbrine and the others, for the streets right down to the wharves bustled with mounted soldiers, and more than 24 Ursa warships, fully crewed, were tied to the piers. They went from shadow to shadow as swiftly as the Ranger could manage. Roger rushed out to the side, motioning to Elbrine that he would scout the flank, and on they ran. They found allies, Prim O'Brien among them, who bade Elbrine follow him to a safe place, but the Ranger ran on, and the monks did not hesitate to follow. Soon others were running too, in the same general direction. Belster and Prim, Heathcombe Mallory and Dainsey Occam and many others, allies of Elbrine and Pony, or allies of Markwort, and even those neutral in the war, who were merely curious about the moving crowd. As soon as she came into the city, just west of the docks, Pony found Allhart soldiers all about her. She kept her determined course, trying to appear inconspicuous, for given the chaos of the day, the burning of buildings and the rousting of innocents from their homes, the streets were fairly packed with peasants rushing this way and that.
There! That woman! It's still Stephanie! Take her!
Pony found her concentration, found her rage, and launched it furiously into the lodestone. She reversed the magic, as she had done with the diamond in Cartanella that night long ago. Thus, instead of focusing the attraction powers of the stone upon a single item, as she had done with Markwort's tooth, she sent out a general repellent power. Though she understood the magnitude of the energy she was sending into the stone, she had no idea of how strong the force might be until a pair of Allhart riders charged to block her path. 20 feet away, their horses started to skitter and buck, then began sliding backward. The riders, eyes wide with confusion, jerked weirdly, grabbing tightly to the reins before they went flying away. Mender's carts uprighted. Metal-handled doors flew open, flew in, even if they were hinged to open out. Became insane, out of control. More soldiers approached, some running, others riding. More soldiers went flying away. More horses skidded backward, some falling over, men sliding away on their sides. Pony held to her focus, thought of her dead parents and her dead child. She started to run, bowing her head, watching only the clearing path before her and trying hard to block out the sounds of confusion and destruction behind.
Chaos, my king! Chaos!
The soldiers stumbled into the room where Danube and Constance quietly talked. Duke Callus rushed in on the messenger's heels.
It is the woman, Gilsephone! She moves openly through the streets with a power we do not understand, throwing us away before we can get near her!
Through the streets? Heading where?
Across the city to the west, toward you, my king!
To Chasewind Manor, more likely.
She's after Markwort. Prepare my carriage!
My king, you should be protected!
But Danube, like so many others in Palmaris that late afternoon, recognized that something momentous had begun here.
My carriage! I will not be denied!
From the high wall encircling St. Precious' roof, Brother Talamus watched the commotion with mounting horror. He spotted Gilsephone moving determinedly along a distant street. He saw a pair of soldiers and then a monk go flying away from her as if they had stepped into a hurricane.
It's not possible.
He wondered what he had done in going to Master Angris, in beginning the course that had led to freedom for this one and her dangerous companions. They were supposed to run away into hiding in deep mountain holes, never to be seen again. But Talamus recognized that Gilsephone was not running away now, and knew instinctively where she was going. Out from the abbey went Talamus and many other monks, running to the side of their father abbot. In a darkened room deep within St. Precious, Bellamer Giravio kept his head down and waited for the tumult to subside. He had come in secretly, down an unused chimney, immediately after instructing Roger to go and warn their friends, thinking to rescue Tempest and Hawkwing, the elven weapons that did not belong in the hands of Markwort's Abelican Church. He had hoped to meet his friends again on the quiet fields north of the city, but in listening to the words of the scrambling monks that rushed outside the door of the small room, the elf knew that he would find no such enjoyment. And now, worst of all, Giravio had to sit quietly and wait until he could make his escape from the fortified abbey. At an intersection not far from the abbey, Brother Talamus and his group found another band of monks running their way. Dianero and some of the monks from St. Mirabel had gone out to the fields north of Palmaris to search for signs of the escaped prisoners, and they, like everyone else in the city it seemed, had come to learn of the brewing disaster.
It is the woman!
Dianero considered the commotion all about him, the pointing fingers, the rushing soldiers and peasants, and turned west, toward the wealthier section of Palmaris, toward Chasewind Manor, and ran off at full speed. And all the city swirled behind him, behind Pony, moving to converge on the great manor that used to house their beloved baron, and now held the dignitaries of the Abelican Church. Too many soldiers and too many monks. Elbrian's group had not even reached the merchant section when a host of monks charged at them.
Split up! We must split up!
Brother Castinicus was caught almost immediately, but he put up a terrific fight and managed to drop two monks to the ground before being pulled down.
I surrender! Do not hurt me!
Brother Vicente, surrounded, weapons leveled his way, threw up his hands in surrender.
Please, brothers, bear witness to the happenings of this day and learn the truth of the Father Abbey!
Then Browman went down, offering no resistance. A monk leapt in front of Nightbird, dropping into a sudden crouch and spinning, his leg flying high. Another monk leapt in from the side, flying for the ranger's head. Nightbird caught him in midair and used his momentum to throw him far to the side. On ran the ranger, pained to see his friends pull down behind him. Only Delman was still running, and then he too was stopped, surrendering at the point of an all-heart soldier's spear. Nightbird heard the clamor of horses coming down a side street, and fearing a patrol of soldiers, swerved aside down an alley.
Nightbird!
O'Brien spotted Roger waving to him from a rooftop. The horses were riderless, a stampede that seemed almost fitting in the wildness of the moment. Nightbird motioned to Roger, then ran to catch a horse.
But I'd be a better ride than that old nag!
Nightbird focused on the sound just as Brad Warden threw the blanket from his telltale human torso, revealing himself. He thundered by, and the ranger leapt atop his back.
Chasewind Manor! You think I'm not knowing? Even the damned horses knew!
The gates were closed and chained. The great metal gates of Chasewind Manor. They exploded inwards, no match for the power of Pony's rage. Three monks came out to face her. The first held a metal-tipped spear, which promptly snapped back into his face. The second monk, having the misfortune of wearing a metal ring, assumed a fighting stance. But the third carried no metal and held his ground, until grim-faced Pony calmly held out her other hand.
Venom and Dial!
Inside the great house, Bishop Francis and Abbot Jaoweth scrambled to warn the Father Abbot. They found him sitting comfortably in his throne in the great audience hall.
Please, Father Abbot, you must flee!
Hinder her not, and know that when this day is through, our power will be even greater in Hans the Bear. Begone!
The two confused and frightened monks glanced nervously at each other and ran off. The king's carriage, surrounded by all-heart horsemen, thundered through the blasted gate just as Pony entered the house.
There!
Ducalus pointed to the woman.
Stop her!
No! And let us see how this plays out. This has been Marquardt's fight from the beginning.
More soldiers, more monks, and even common folk rushed into the courtyard.
To the wall!
All eyes turned to see the huge centaur crash through the hedge at the top of the 8-foot wall. Brad Warden could not make the leap cleanly, though he managed to get his four legs and the bulk of his torso over the barrier before crashing. Nightbird kicked far away from the tumbling centaur.
Oh, well, that hurt.
Brad Warden struggled to rise. Nightbird started for him, but the centaur, seeing soldiers and monks closing fast, waved him away.
Go to it!
Nightbird turned to face a soldier charging in with sword raised overhead. Up came Nightbird's crossed arms, and he stepped forward, catching the man's hands on the downswing. He let the sword descend a bit lower, then threw it up high, punching the soldier in the face. Elbrian yanked the man's sword free and moved forward. The door of the great house was in sight, but a dozen soldiers and twice that number of monks moved to block his path.
Let him pass!
Neither monk nor soldier dared to go against the king. Their ranks parted as the ranger charged.
Only Nightbird! Ring the house and let no others enter!
You take a great chance!
The look Danube gave Constance and Callus was one of the coldest either of them had ever seen.
Damn, Marquardt! May Nightbird and Pony emerge as victors with the Father Abbot's head in hand!
Constance's eyes widened at the bold declaration, but Ducalus smiled and had to fight hard to stop himself from wrapping his king in a great hug. Nightbird reached the door just as Jaoweth and Francis came out. Francis moved to grab the ranger. Old Abbot Jaoweth put up his hands and stepped aside. The crowd converged on Chasewind Manor from every section of Palmaris, wealthy merchants and lowly peasants. A crowd of St. Precious monks, confused, and some crying. Ducalus moved his forces, soldiers and monks alike, into defensive formations, holding back the crowd.
Men! This could explode into a riot! If it does, the safety of the king is paramount, no matter who has to be trampled into the dirt!
For the most part, the crowd stayed back. One man, an Abelican monk, did run through the line of soldiers, sprinting for the manor house. The soldiers stopped him before he reached the doors.
Do you know who I am?
The nervous soldiers did indeed recognize the former bishop, and they glanced nervously at Callus, who was far to the side. Despite Dianero's insistence in bullying, though, the Duke shook his head, and the soldiers held their ground. Dianero turned toward the king's carriage.
I demand...
You demand nothing of me! Hold the house secure! None are to enter!
Dianero broke away, sprinting for the door. When soldiers beat him to the mark, he continued his run around the front of the house, then along the side.
You men! Follow him! Do not let him get away!
But Ducalus wasn't concerned, for Chasewind Manor had only two doors, the great front entrance and a smaller way in, also heavily guarded, on the side of the house opposite where the former bishop had run. Frustrated, Dianero ran frantically around to the back. Then he skidded to a stop, looking up at the one window large enough to accommodate a man. But that window was 30 feet off the ground. In front of the house, Brother Brahman and the other three monk prisoners were dragged through the gates by Allheart soldiers.
Take the prisoners away! Lock them up securely!
Let them stay!
This may well determine their fate. Keep them secure, but allow them to bear witness!
Another man slipped onto the lawn as well, easily blending in with the crowd. Roger spotted Brad Warden immediately, the centaur standing, but obviously wounded, held steady between two mounted Allheart soldiers. Roger felt as trapped as his friend, for there seemed no way in. All he could do was stand and watch. Once inside the manor house, the ranger had little trouble following Pony, for she had left a trail of devastation. Twisted metal, blasted doors, shattered glass, and more than one unconscious monk. He went down the corridor into a great pillared hall and up a wide sweeping staircase. Then down another narrow hall into the most decorated corridor in all the house. And at the far end of the long corridor, he spied a door, carved and decorated, and he knew without doubt that Pony was behind that portal. And so was Markwart. The soldiers came around the back corner.
Stop right there!
Dianero ignored them and transformed his lower torso into the shape of the tiger. The soldiers fell all over one another, trying to keep back. Dianero looked to the window.
You cannot escape!
You cannot stop me!
Then he was flying. Up, up. On, Nightbird ran, along the huge decorated window overlooking the back gardens, thinking to put his shoulder down and barrel right into the room. In the blink of an eye, L. Brian Winden and Marcalo Dianero paired off.
So I get my wish.
There he sat, so smug in his great chair, the embodiment of everything Pony hated, of everything she considered evil in humankind.
Clever of you to get out of St. Precious. Master Ingress died for that.
You intend to kill everybody who opposes you. Destroy them all.
If I must, because I am right, you fool. I speak to God.
You speak to Bestus Bolzabar, none other.
pony advanced, undaunted. She lifted her arm, hematite in hand, and went into the stone eagerly, all her hatred leading the way. The spirit of Markwart was waiting for her, and though she hit it with all the momentum of her emotions behind her, managed to push the spirit back toward the physical form, it was but a temporary advantage. Markwart, so powerful, held her at bay, retaliating with the power of a demon. Nightbird knew the danger of Dianero, knew that he had to fight a long and progressive dance, gaining one tiny advantage at a time. From their previous battle, he understood that Dianero was his equal, or near it, and that every movement must lead to something stronger, for this was a game of strategy, not a test of speed. One tiny advantage gained, leading to the next. And yet, how could the ranger endure such a prolonged, calculating dance when that ornate door at the end of the hall beckoned to him, when he knew Pony was beyond that portal facing Markwart, a foe who had beaten her before? How could he wait? He charged powerfully at Dianero, closing ground and thrusting ahead with the unbalanced sword. Dianero leapt above and to the side and came back at once, forcing the ranger to dodge.
He is torturing her in there.
Dianero slid to the side, keeping between Nightbird and the door. Elbrian skipped forward and stabbed. The monk had measured Nightbird's reach and was retreating cautiously before the sword could get anywhere near the mark. And so it went, back and forth, with neither making any brazen attack, and neither giving the other any opening. Dianero's smile was wide as he turned his gaze from the ranger to consider the door. Then he charged, feinting a leap, then diving to the ground, skittering under the extended sword, and smashing the side of the ranger's knee. Nightbird rolled on his back and brought his sword up, forcing Dianero to skid to a sudden stop. The ranger used that break to roll backward, landing lightly on his feet and coming forward with two quick steps and a thrust at Dianero's shoulder. The monk reeled with the pain and fell back, clutching at his human arm with his tiger paw. On came Nightbird, perfectly balanced. But he did not appreciate the true power of those feline legs. Dianero stumbled backward, then dug in his claws quickly and launched himself at the ranger. He caught him between sword thrusts, slapped the blade aside, and drove on, slamming into him, locking Nightbird's arms at his sides in a powerful hug. And that hug was all the more deadly, since one of the monk's hands carried the dagger-like claws of a great cat. Nightbird felt those claws digging into his back, near his kidney. With a great burst of strength, he believed that he could break the hold, but he recognized that in doing so, Dianero's tiger paw would tear half his back away. So Elbrian dropped his sword and squirmed to get one hand up under the tight hold. Dianero clenched all the tighter, claws extending, stabbing deep holes. But Nightbird had his right arm under the tiger paw and worked slowly with his superior strength to throw the monk off balance, to force Dianero to exert energy to keep his footing as well as his tight hold. Now the ranger flexed his shoulders, weakening the monk's grasp. Iron-corded muscles stretched and pushed, the ranger moving himself so that his back followed the monk's tiger paw while the human hand slipped farther and farther away. Then Elbrian saw a change coming over Dianero's face, the transformation of his mouth into a great fanged maw. Nightbird snapped his head forward suddenly, brutally smashing the monk's nose even as it elongated. He hammered his forehead in again, knowing he was out of time. Feeling the monk's other hand too becoming a clawed paw, Nightbird threw his arms wide, accepting the agony as Dianero's claws scored deep lines across the side of his lower back, slashing all the way around to the side of his ribcage. The ranger's right hand slapped the changing face, while his other came in hard against Dianero's crotch. Grabbing a tight hold with both, the ranger spun, lifting Dianero from the ground, then slamming him hard against the wall. Nightbird dropped the monk to the ground. Nightbird leapt back, paused, and lunged, forehead first, squarely into the middle of the monk's disfigured face. Dinero's legs buckled, but the ranger wouldn't let it end so easily. One of his hands caught the chin, one the crotch, and up went the monk, high into the air. The ranger turned and rushed across the corridor, purposely aiming for a part of the great window that the monk had not already broken. Lurching with pain, feeling his guts spilling out his side, Nightbird looked out the window and was satisfied when he saw that the dangerous creature lay still on the lawn, broken and bloody atop the sharp shards of glass. Not even bothering to retrieve the sword, for he knew that such a weapon would be useless against Markwart, and knew too that his own strength was fast fading, Nightbird went for the door. Meanwhile, Pony and Markwart's struggle, greater than on the darkened Palmaris field that terrible night, now became so intense that it transcended the spiritual, spilling over into the physical. Outside the manor house, the crowd fell back, for the house thrummed with energy, lights flashing black and white.
Pray that Markwart does not emerge victorious.
King Danube spoke to his two friends, and to Jaowith, who had moved near the carriage. Alice and Constance were already doing just that, and the old abbot, horrified by the spectacle before him, did not chastise the king. Even Brother Francis, standing on the lawn, the closest man to the house, could only stare helplessly. The door flew open, and a pair of young monks staggered out, falling to the grass and crawling away.
Save us, please! The demon is awake once again!
The stunned Francis did not dare to enter the place. Pony had no child within her, no vulnerability, and so she fought with all her strength and all her rage. But she could not win. Pony knew that. The spirit within Markwart was too strong, impossibly strong, and darker than anything she had ever known. She struggled valiantly, hit him with every ounce of energy and willpower she could muster, and held her ground as minute after minute slipped past. The force of Markwart, surprised by the strength of the woman, came on and on. Grew larger to tower over the woman's spirit, to engulf her as if to swallow her. Yet he could not, and so they struggled. And both of them knew that time worked against Pony, that she would tire first, despite her rage. But then, she felt a touch on her physical shoulder, and the temporary distraction sent Markwart's spirit driving her backward. It was a gentle touch, though, the stroke of a friend, of a lover. And then, somehow, a third spirit joined the pair, the specter of Nightbird, come to Pony's aid.
Both together, then! Better to be done with both of you, to be rid of the troublesome pair!
On Markwart came, great bat-like wings sprouting from his spiritual shadow, rising up and towering over them. Elbrian's spirit fell against Pony's, touching her, bonding in an embrace as intimate as any the couple had ever known. Now the two were one, linked spiritually as they had often used Benel de Sada to link physically. Together, they stopped the progress of the Father Rabbit. Together, they pushed the dark spirit back toward its host. Each inch of ground cost them dearly, ate at their life forces, drained energy. They pushed on, the ranger taking the lead, putting his spirit against the strikes of Markwart, accepting the punishment. For Elbrian knew something that Pony did not, knew that his physical form was fast fading, his guts spilling, blood running. The sacrifice needed, and coming into this battle, they were near Markwart now, and all three knew that to push the spirit back into its host and then to follow it meant victory. rabbit dug in and fought back. Coldness engulfed the ranger's physical form. He felt it and understood what it foretold. This was the test of his faith, he knew. The test of all his training. This, the ultimate sacrifice, was what it meant to be a ranger. By every instinct within him, he had to stop, had to tell Pony, had to live. Instead, he drove on. Elbryan heard it, but it seemed distant. All the world seemed distant. To those outside, it ended as a great burst of black light, a great dark flash, and then the house went quiet. Francis rushed in, as did Danube and his advisors, Roger and Bradwarden, and none moved to stop them. Almost as an afterthought, standing at the entryway, King Danube looked back.
Bring the prisoner, monks, for their lives surely hang in the balance.
At the back of the house, Bellamar Giravial paused only for a moment to consider the broken form of Dianero, then flew up to the window and the great hallway. Pony felt the spirit of Markwart break apart and knew that the man was defeated. Her joy became quickly tempered, though, as she felt another spirit diminish, as she watched Elbryan's life force fade fast before her. She came from her trance, back to her corporeal form, to see Markwart standing on shaky legs, staring at her in disbelief, to see Elbryan lying next to her, his body very still and very pale, surrounded by blood.
Elbryan! Oh.
Pony fell over her lover, tried to reach out for him with the hematite, but as she went down, all of her energy gone, she felt the floor come up after her, swallowing her in a profound blackness. Markwart watched with horror. They had beaten him. No, not just him, but also that inner voice that had guided him for so long, a voice that he recognized now, not as insight, but as a separate being. For now the Father Abbot knew the truth of it, and knew his life to be a lie, his course to be one of darkness, and not redemption. He could have killed them both, but that was the furthest thought from his mind at that terrible moment. He went to them, confused, and when he realized the man to be beyond his help, and heard the noise of rushing feet down below in the house, he scooped the woman in his arms and moved, stiff-legged, to the door. He came through, not even noticing the small form of the elf standing right beside it. Poor Giravio didn't know what to make of it. He saw Pony and sensed that the old man, and how old and battered Markwart appeared, would not, could not harm her further. No, something had happened to Markwart. The elf understood that the man would not live for long, that he had been beaten. He thought to put his sword into the man's back anyway, and refrained only because he realized the terrible consequences such an action might have for his folk. He started to go to Pony, thinking to take her away from the horrid wretch who had brought her so much pain, but then he saw his friend, who had been as his son, lying still on the floor. Giravio rushed to O'Brien's side. He tried to tuck the spilling guts back with his bare hands, but it was too late, he knew. The ranger opened his green eyes.
Pony lives.
She won. The demon is purged.
His eyes rolled back and closed.
Your son lives in Underbrook Innes, under the care of Lady Dasselrond.
O'Brien's eyes opened again, his grip tightening on the elf's arm, and he managed to smile. And then,
he died. Bishop Francis, first up the stairs and first into the grand corridor, came upon Markwart, walking stiffly, bearing Pony in his arms. The younger monk grabbed his mentor and took the burden, laying Pony gently on the floor. Then Delacorte caught the falling Markwart and eased him down. The others crashed into the hall behind him.
Pony! Pony!
Macbeth! Where is the ranger?
I chose wrong, Brother Francis. With Jojona, with Evelyn. Yes, with Evelyn. I should have recognized the truth.
No, Father.
Markwart's dark eyes opened wide, and he grabbed Francis tightly, with strength beyond his broken frame.
Yes! Yes, I chose wrong. See to my church, dear Francis. Become the shepherd of the flock and not the dictator. But beware. Beware. Beware that in your quest for humanism, you do not steal the mystery of spiritualism.
When this last spasm ended, the Abelican Church had no leader.
She is alive!
Brother Francis turned to see Roger working furiously over the woman, and to see Roger quietly pocket her gemstones in the process. Behind the man and the prone woman stood King Danube and his advisors, with soldiers behind them keeping the monks at bay, but not Bradwarden. The centaur, wounded though he was, pushed through the Allheart line and past the king, heading for the room at the end of the hall. Some soldiers moved to pursue, but Danube motioned them back.
Father Abbot!
Old Jaoweth came through the door.
He's dead.
Assassin! The Father Abbot's blood demands justice! God, shut your mouth!
Brother Brahman pulled free of the soldier holding him, and King Danube motioned for the Allheart knight to step back and let the monk free.
If Delabot Markwart is dead, it is because of the dark road he chose to walk.
Sacrilege!
You heard the man tell you to be quiet, good abbot. We will discuss this matter at length among our own at a college that we must quickly convene.
Brother Francis!
But I warn you, if you side with dead Markwart against Brother Brahman and the others, I will go against you.
Jaoweth had no reply. He looked to the king, but Danube offered no support. Francis turned to Pony and to Roger, who nodded that he believed the woman would live.
By the Father Abbot's own dying words, the time has come for change in the church. Look at her, the disciple of Avalon, named as an outlaw. And yet I will nominate her as the Mother Abbess of the new church.
What foolishness is this?
At the same time, I nominate Brother Avalon Despris as a candidate for canonization.
Saint Avalon!
Impossible!
Why do we tolerate them, my king?
I hereby dismiss the office of Bishop of Palmaris. And I warn you all, put your house in order, else I shall do it for you. If a monk can assume the role of bishop, then similar precedents can place the king in the role of Father Abbot.
Francis looked to Brahman and nodded determinedly. Jaoweth, catching the signal, wondered if he would survive with his position of abbot intact. Bradwarden came out of the room then, bearing the body of Elbrian. And there would be no time of celebration for those who had known the man as friend and companion. Brother Brahman and the other monks bowed their heads in respect.
No.
Roger fell over Pony. He cried not only for himself, but for Pony as well. Outside the manor house, standing in the glass from the smashed window, Bellamar Giravio looked up one last time, his heart broken. He understood that it was time for him to return to Anderblock Innes, time for him to run away from the humans and their foolish battles. What he could not understand, though, was how the body of Marcalo de Anero had disappeared. She heard them arguing in the house behind her, heard her own name spoken many times, but it was unimportant to Pony that gray and windy summer day. Everything seemed unimportant at that moment, save the two commemorative markers set in the garden of Chasewind Manor. One had been a gift from King Danube, a symbolic gesture, as the man had reclaimed Chasewind Manor. The other had come from Brother Browman, and surprisingly, from Brother Francis, to signify the support of the new Abelican Church. Or was it still the Abelican Church? During the heated arguments, Brother Browman had hinted that his group and any who would follow, and his opponent, Abbot Jaoweth, had recognized that the list of followers might be long, might splinter from the Abelican Church to begin the Church of Avalon.
They love us now.
She spoke to the marker. It was only a marker, for Elbrian's body wasn't interred there. Pony would not allow it. Her husband was to be buried in the grove beyond Dundalus, the place where he had found the grave of his uncle Mather, and where he had earned Tempest. To that end, Brad Warden and Roger were leaving Palmaris that very day, the centaur pulling a caisson, carrying Elbrian's casket. Pony could hardly believe he was gone. She stood there, very still, trying to replay the events that had brought her to this terrible place. But she could not fathom it all. Half her soul had been torn away, and now she was empty. They talked of making her the Mother Abbess, the leader of the church. King Danube had promised her much, perhaps even the barony of Palmaris, in honor of her service to the kingdom, for the defeat of Markwart was now being heralded as a victory for the crown. At that moment, despite her desire to do good, Pony hoped that none of it would come true, that they would all just leave her alone with her memories and her pain. Perhaps she could be a great leader for the church, perhaps taken in the direction Avalon had espoused. She hardly cared. For all she knew was emptiness and helplessness, a sense of unreality, that this terrible thing could not have happened. When she thought back to the previous fall, pregnant and Caratinella, making love with Elbrian on the field, she nearly toppled over with weakness. A gentle hand touched Pony's shoulder, and she turned to see Callus, the interim Baron of Palmaris, and Constance Pemblebury.
Are you going with them to the north?
Tomorrow, perhaps. Or if this business with the church is not finished, then perhaps sometime later on.
In truth, Pony did not want to go back to Dundalus. Could not bear to watch O'Brien's casket be lowered into the ground. They walked solemnly, staring straight ahead, and not at the crowds gathered along the roads, many throwing flowers at the caisson. Elbrian, Nightbird, was fast becoming legend to the folk of Palmaris, something that both Roger and Brad Warden welcomed cautiously. For though they knew that their friend was worthy of any honor bestowed him, they wanted to remember the truth of the man, and didn't want that truth, impressive enough of its own accord, blurred by ridiculously exaggerated legend. This moment, Elbrian's moment, would live on in the memories of all who watched. And that audience included King Danube Brock Ursel himself. A contingent of All-Heart horsemen led the way and would accompany the caisson all the way to Dundalus. They came through the northern gate of Palmaris to find many more folk, all the farmers of the northern fields. Then another onlooker reared up, Mighty Symphony, on a hillock not far away.
He knows.
As if on cue, the great stallion charged down the hill to join them, cantering past the All-Heart soldiers, who sat in silent awe of the magnificent steed, stronger and swifter than even their famed Togairu horses. Symphony pawed at the caisson, and Brad Warden, ever attuned to the desires of horses, pulled the harness from over his head and strapped it on the stallion. On they went, quietly, to the north. From far away, Belimar Giravio watched the procession, the last journey of his dear friend, then turned for home. Unseen by the elf, though not so far away, Marcalo Dianero watched too. His physical wounds were nearly healed by the power of his hematite ring, but his emotional scars ran deeper. The monk, former monk it would seem, came to question so many things as he watched the outpouring for Nightbird, as he secretly listened to the conversations of farmers, damning Markwart, praising the ranger, and speaking in hopeful terms of a great and miraculous change within the Abelican Church. Dianero could hardly believe the turn of events. But he had too many problems of his own to sit and ponder them. He had no idea of where his favored gemstone might be, had not seen it in weeks, and believed that it had somehow merged with his soul. For now, he was man and beast, and though he could often willfully shift from one form to the other, or to something in between, there were other times, times of anger or when he smelled prey, that the urge to fall into the form of the tiger overwhelmed him. A pall settled over Anderbloch Innes later that summer when Belimar Jaravial returned with the news that Nightbird had fallen. Though the war had ended favorably, though Jaravial had returned to them, though the child of Nightbird and Pony was growing strong and healthy, the loss of Nightbird and Niestiel weighed heavily on the small and intimate family of the Tuello Far. The one bright spot seemed to be the child, so full of smiles. Jaravial and Lady Dasselrond went to the babe soon after Jaravial's return, standing over it as it lay on the shining green grass, the lady bending low to stroke his soft cheek.
He will grow strong and special, and will come to greatness beyond that of his father and his mother.
She lives.
Dasselrond turned a firm stare on the elf. Of course, she already knew about Pony, and knew, too, that Jaravial had only made the remark to hint that he believed that the child belonged with its mother. Lady Dasselrond would hear none of that, her stare reminded Jaravial. They had taken the babe as their protege, the child of Nightbird and not of Elbrion, the child of Anderbloch Innes, and to the elven lady, the issue was settled.
I aided them in their escape.
Do you believe that I did not know you would do as much when I allowed you to return to them? You chose well on this matter.
Oh, what of Gilsepony? She knows Benilda Sada. We cannot take that from her.
Lady Dasselrond didn't seem concerned.
Gilsepony was a fine companion to Nightbird. The woman will not betray him by sharing that which he taught her.
Jaravial hoped the lady was right, for he knew that Dasselrond would be watching the humans more closely for a long while, and that if Pony did begin to teach the sword dance to king's soldiers or to monks, she would be taken prisoner by the Tuello Far, if she was lucky, and if Dasselrond was feeling particularly compassionate. Then they turned their attention to the babe. His crooked little grin resembled that of young Elbrion when he had first come to Anderbloch Innes, but the child showed the same bright blue sparkles in his eyes as his mother. Except when the elves left him alone. For then came a hint of a red fire behind those blue orbs, a trait inherited not from his mother nor his father, but planted within the child within Pony's womb during her first battle with Dalibert Markwart, the corporeal vessel of the demon Dactyl, Bestis Bolzabar. The Demon War Saga, Book 3, The Demon Apostle, Part 3, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1999, R.A. Salvatore. All rights reserved. Recorded by arrangement with Ballantine Books, an imprint of Random House Publishing Group, a division of Random House Incorporated. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Richard Rowan, Eric Messner, Andy Clements, Elizabeth Jernigan, Joe Brack, David Coyne, Stephen Carpenter, Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, Christopher Graybill, Mort Shelby, Terrence Aselford, Tim Gatman, Ken Jackson, Corey James, Michael John Casey, Michael Glenn, Thomas Penny, Lily Beacon, Nathan Bennett, Dylan Lynch, and Jonathan Watkins. Additional redshirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. Additional music by Dan Smith and Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed The Demon Apostle, be sure to look for Brandon Sanderson's Elantris and Warbreaker, and Simon R. Green's Blue Moon Rising. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for exciting previews of other graphic audio titles.
From the author of the critically acclaimed Elantris comes a beautifully crafted tale of dark intrigue, bitter rivalries, and powerful magic. In order to save his kingdom of Idris from certain annihilation, King Dedalan must honor a treaty made long ago. He must send his oldest daughter to marry Suzabron, the God King of Alondrin.
War is coming, Your Majesty. They will attack.
If we send her, Yarda, we send her to her death.
Sending Vivenna is a poor plan, but it's our only plan.
Father, if we break this treaty, it will mean war. I am prepared to sacrifice for our people.
Lord God of Colors, forgive me. Vivenna, you will not go to wed the tyrant god of our enemies. I'm sending Ciri to your place.
Ciri, the youngest daughter of King Dedalan, soon finds herself plunged into a world of intrigue and politics, inhabited by undead gods and zombie armies. And she quickly learns that there is a darkness spreading through the highest order of Alondrin, threatening to consume all she loves.
Vessel, doing your duty as the vessel was the danger.
You have to tell me something.
You must not bear him a child. That is the danger. This all, everything here in the palace, is not what it appears to be.
Cursed with a lecherous form of magic which causes her to feed off the souls of the living, Princess Vivenna battles to save the life of her sister and prevent the war engine of Alondrin from crushing her homeland.
Your father and Lemix were right. The Alondrin have everything to lose by not attacking you.
I'm not going to become an Awakener, Dim. I might turn a blind eye toward that lifeless for now, but I will not awaken.
In the Court of the Gods, the highest authority in all of Alondrin, Lightsong the Bold, resurrected hero of ages since past, must come to grips with his newfound immortality as he struggles to unlock the dark secret of the Pantheon of Gods and their unstoppable armies of the undead.
What do they want of me, Larimar? Do they really think I'll do it? Lightsong the Selfish. Do they really think I'd give my life for one of them?
You offer hope, Your Grace. A last unlikely hope.
And if they're wrong, I have no desire to die. And why should it be otherwise? I mean, we have to die to heal one of them. We're gods to them only until they kill us.
And the key to halting the baying hounds of war may lie in the hands of the one man who wants to watch the world burn. Vasher, the Warbreaker.
You. Are you here to free me?
No, Vahir. I'm here to kill you.
Don't miss Brandon Sanderson's high fantasy masterpiece, Warbreaker. Available now in graphic audio.
Serrano Legacy, Book 7, Against the Odds, Part 1, in graphic audio.
Hands on your head.
Don't move.
What's going on?
I have orders to separate you from the regular space service as of today.
I haven't done anything wrong.
Fleet has no place for your kind.
Squeeza, Esme, most recent rank 03, separated by order of Admiral Serrano? Grandmother, she double-crossed us.
Bad news.
What?
Peter Origamos, Consuline's foreign minister. Mother, killed him.
Miranda, you can't expect me to let it go.
Damn and blast, Cecilia. The man had my husband killed. He was a despicable, slimy...
Leave the Familius. I'll take you.
Aldrich! Aldrich, report all starboard aft teams.
Sir, we've got a peak our chem scan doesn't identify. Something with a molecular weight of 16.
16? Lieutenant, didn't I tell you to look out for methane?
Emergency! We have a potentially explosive gas mix.
Sir, I'm scared. I can't just stand here.
Sure you can. Smartest thing you can do.
No! Don't leave me behind!
No! Don't!
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.